and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Sarah Dykstra. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear from Eric Weddle as he reports on school funding. Brandon Smith talks about a campaign to target Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly. And John Kane, host of Eye in the Arts, talks with Phil Potempa, marketing director for theater at the center, about the performance of Big River. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore is now significantly closer to becoming a national park. Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson has more.
Wednesday, the House Committee on Natural Resources approved Congressman Pete Visclosky's legislation to designate the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore as a national park. Visclosky says the designation would create the first national park in Indiana and the 60th national park in the United States, and it would have significant advantages.
The real value is that the national park designation would provide greater recognition for the Indiana Dunes as an attraction, with the intent of drawing more visitors to our area and hopefully stimulating the local economy.
The committee approved the legislation, H.R. 1488, the Indiana Dunes National Park Act, by unanimous consent. The measure is now referred to the full House and is expected to be considered in the coming months. Specifically, H.R. 1488 would retitle the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore as the Indiana Dunes National Park. The initial effort to name this area as a national park began in 1916.
The name change is not necessarily the hardest thing in the world to do, but I would suggest that it took 50 years for the creation of the park in the first instance. Subsequently, the efforts have been focused on enhancing the existing resource and expanding it.
Visclosky says other than signage, there would be no discernible change to the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore should it become a national park. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sharon Jackson.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. State lawmakers want to figure out how to identify and help school corporations before they fall into financial distress. WFYI and IPBS's Eric Weddle reports on a study committee meeting Monday, October 2nd that examined the issue and ways to avoid intervening in any more school districts. Eric has more education reports coming next.
The state this year took over financial operations at Muncie and Gary School Corporations. Private managers were hired to sort out debt and determine a path forward. The state's legislative services agency, a bipartisan legal analysis group, offered lawmakers a few ways to track a district's income and debt and rate its probability of being fiscally sound or trending into trouble. But Gary Democratic Senator Eddie Melton says he wants the state to offer help, not act as oversight of how local districts operate.
Being able to identify those issues and figuring out how to best aid and assist, be it with technical assistance, and prevent any type of repeat of what has happened in Gary and in Muncie.
Lawmakers expect debate in the 2018 session over the financial health of school districts. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Weddle.
The State Board of Education approved school A through F letter grades Wednesday, October 4th, for the 2016-2017 school year. More schools received an A than last year. But WFYI and IPBS's education reporter Eric Weddle reports the board warned against celebration.
The overall percent of schools that earned A's and B's on the state's accountability scale for 2017 is the same as last year. School grades are calculated using various metrics in student achievement. This is the second year that a student's academic growth on the I-STEP is weighted more heavily. But state board member David Freitas says that means schools can earn a higher letter grade even if many students fail the test. Data shows only 15% of schools are in the A and B category based on passing the I-STEP.
I mean, that is very, very serious. And when we looked at combined data, aggregate data with growth, everything looks fine.
State Superintendent Jennifer McCormick says a new federal law will change school accountability next year.
It's hard to compare apples to apples because when you're saying, you know, should we start celebrating, we don't have any good trend data to celebrate with because we keep moving the targets.
The state board will soon begin making new rules on next year's A to F grades. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Weddle.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. A fiscal conservative group will spend more than $1 million on advertising campaigns to target Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly on tax reform. Americans for Prosperity will launch ads in three states, Indiana, Missouri, and Wisconsin, to put pressure on Democratic senators to back the GOP tax reform effect in Congress. The 30-second ad, which starts running today, October 6th, emphasizes the need for tax cuts.
A fiscal conservative group will spend more than $1 million on an advertising campaign to target Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly on tax reform. Americans for Prosperity will launch ads in three states, Indiana, Missouri, and Wisconsin, to put pressure on Democratic senators to back the GOP tax reform effort in Congress. The 30-second ad, which starts running tomorrow, emphasizes the need for tax cuts.
Don't let Senator Donnelly stand in the way of a simple, fair tax system.
In a video response, Donnelly says the details of tax reform are key, and he argues the only plan released so far from President Trump lacks many of those details.
And like most Hoosiers, I'm not going to buy a car before kicking the tires. That's not standing in the way. That's just common sense.
All three of the Democratic senators targeted by the ad campaign are up for re-election next year.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Hoosier advocates for legislative redistricting reform hope a U.S. Supreme Court case on the issue will spur action in the Indiana General Assembly. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports on an Indianapolis rally Tuesday, October 3rd, as the nation's high court hears the lawsuit out of Wisconsin.
Hoosier advocates for legislative redistricting reform hope a U.S. Supreme Court case on the issue will spur action in the Indiana General Assembly. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports on an Indianapolis rally as the nation's high court hears the lawsuit out of Wisconsin.
The case at the U.S. Supreme Court centers on what's called partisan gerrymandering, or the manipulation of legislative districts to benefit a political party. Common Cause Indiana Policy Director Julia Vaughn says if the Supreme Court decides Wisconsin's maps are invalid, it would be a significant step toward reform at the Indiana State House.
It will serve as some great motivation. They will understand the significance of the decision.
Sheila Kennedy was a member of the Special Legislative Study Committee on Redistricting Reform. It met for 2 years and recommended changes to Indiana's system, but subsequent legislation never even got a vote at the General Assembly. Still, Kennedy says a favorable ruling could spur action because, in Indiana, redistricting reform is a bipartisan cause.
We have a number of legislators in the Indiana General Assembly who really do see this problem, and they're on both sides of the aisle.
The Supreme Court's decision would likely come next year. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lauren Chapman.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Congress let funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, expire over the past weekend. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports on what that might mean for nearly 100,000 Hoosier children covered by the plan.
Jointly funded by the federal government and the states, CHIP has covered Hoosier children for 20 years. The Affordable Care Act increased funding and brought the state's expenses down. And Covering Kids and Families Public Policy Director Mark Fairchild says Indiana has rollover money that will help cover as federal funding goes away.
Really, things are getting more worrisome if we look 6 months out from now and we still don't have a clear plan on the table, because then the state's going to have to look at how do they stretch those dollars that they have in reserve.
Fairchild says all the focus on repeal and replace of the ACA has bumped any legislation to shore up CHIP, but he says hearings are already scheduled for this week.
Pretty quickly after that, I think we're going to see that getting moved to a vote on the floor. It's a very popular program. Nobody wants to be one that drops the ball on this.
Fairchild expects the core funding will stay in place. Only 5% of Indiana's children go uninsured. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. John Kane, host of Eye in the Arts, talks with Phil Potempa, marketing director for theater at the Center, about their performance of Big River.
Joining me for this edition of Eye on the Arts is Phil Potempa. the marketing director for Theater at the Center at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts in Munster. Welcome, Phil.
Thank you.
Nice to have you back.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
tell us about the current show.
All right. Well, right now, our big fall musical that we're in the midst of, we're in the middle of Big River. And Big River, it goes all the way until October the 15th. And, you know, it's something that a lot of times I see a lot of theater, you see a lot of theater. This was not a title that I was even familiar that was out there. So, you know, it's one that's very popular because it's the telling of Mark Twain's, the musical telling, I should say, Mark Twain's Huck Finn. So it has all his favorite characters like Tom Sawyer and, of course, Big Jim. And what happens is that it's their adventures down the river and what characters they meet along the way. A musical telling, but there's also some humor and an important message along the way as well.
Yeah. Well, I remember being in some sort of a Tom Sawyer musical when I was a little kid, when I was in elementary school or maybe junior high school. It certainly lends itself, that material lends itself to. And Roger Miller, the country singer.
That's right,
he helped
to
write this, right?
Yeah, the man behind all those ballads like King of the Road. He's the one that did this, and it played on Broadway. So it was on Broadway in 1985 and then was revived again in 2003, did a tour in 2004. So it's been out there. And Roger Miller, he wrote all of the music for this, and it swept a lot of the Tony Awards for that year. So 7 Tony Awards, Best Musical, Best Original Score, and Roger Miller is just a legend with storytelling through music, with the music and lyrics that he has created for this show.
So how will the stage at the Theater at the Center be transformed to create the banks of the Mississippi?
It might require some imagination, but not as much as you think. Ann Davis is our set designer for this, and Ann is a familiar creative face right there on staff at Theater at the Center. So she has the banks sculpted, and it's very imaginative. So if you're thinking of those graceful oaks and weeping willows that grace the banks of the river, you can expect those, along with a lot of the decor and, of course, the costuming that our costume shop is creating is just fantastic for those period pieces with the big hoop skirts and just a lot of it that is a kind of a throwback to a more gentle, gracious time, I guess, when people had leisurely afternoons.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
That you make it sound so tempting and enticing.
We need that today.
Yeah, enticing. So, what other any other special events connected to the show or otherwise?
Mm-hmm. You know, when we're not doing our main stage musicals and our plays, we always like to bring in special event concerts and headliners. And so, in October, we have a couple great things. We have a salute to Ella Fitzgerald, the First Lady of Song, as the show is called, and that's by Alex J. Ross, and she's fantastic. She has 2 performances that on October the 22nd. It's a Sunday, so she has her afternoon at 2:30, and then a 7 o'clock performance. And then many, many of your listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with the Purdue Glee Club is a favorite that we have at our theater every spring. Mm-hmm. We decided to do something different, never on our stage before. We've decided to invite the ladies, the Purduettes, their Glee Club, will do 1 performance on Saturday, October the 21st at 3 o'clock. So it'll be a lot of fun with all those favorite songs from the American Songbook.
That's going to be a very musical weekend.
It is. It's a very busy weekend.
I wasn't aware that there was such a thing as the Purduettes.
It wasn't either. Where have we been, John?
I don't know. Under a rock.
Exactly.
But I've heard of Ella Fitzgerald.
That's right. Good.
And I love Ella, so that's fantastic. And then the new season has been announced. What can we look forward to?
We spent September renewing all of our subscribers, and we have a popular subscriber program. And so now it's time for new subscribers to come on board. So here's the titles to entice you. And again, it's such a steal of a deal to get the whole shebang. So Still Magnolias launches in February, followed by our big spring musical, Forever Plaid, returns to our stage. The summer, this one I'm really looking forward to, The Lady with All the Answers. It's a play that's a one-woman show all about the life of Ann Landers and as she writes her famous newspaper columns. And then in the fall, we're ready with Ghost the Musical, just like the film with Patrick Swayze and Whoopi Goldberg and Demi Moore. Mm-hmm. And then our big holiday musical for Christmas time is going to be Miracle on 34th Street. So jam-packed season.
That sounds like a good selection.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
The Ann Landers play sounds fantastic.
Oh, it's very juicy. It's, you know, between her and her twin sister, Dear Abby, this is on the eve of Ann writing her most famous column when she has to tell her readers she's about to be divorced. So the woman with all the answers does not have the answer for this one of those she advises so many people each day. So it's very compelling.
I bet the wigs are going to be fun.
The wig is so key, and I always say that. I've seen a couple versions of this, and I'm telling you, the wig is make or break. It's got to be that bouffant with the sweep.
The sweep.
That's it.
Exactly. I love that. Oh, that'll be fantastic. Do you know who's going to play Anne already?
It has not been cast yet, but we're getting very close.
Oh, good. All right. Well, that'll be fun to find out more about later. Well, thanks, Phil, for being here, and thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Eye on the Arts.
October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we talked with the chief executive of a Northwest Indiana facility that is on the front lines of dealing with the multi-faced issue of domestic abuse and violence and helping those being abused. Linda Perez of St. Jude House in Crown Point also says they devote a lot of time every October on their community awareness campaign. Here's that conversation.
On average, nearly 20 people seem to be involved in some type of physical abuse by somebody that they're very close to here in the United States. One in four women, one in seven men, yes, men, experience some type of physical, intimate abuse of some type by somebody. These are just some of the facts, and we'll find out more as we get into National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And we're going to turn now to the director of the St. Jude House in Crown Point, which is a family center that helps in violence prevention, as well as being a shelter as well, too. Linda Perez with us. Linda, thanks for being with us here on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really pleased to be on your show.
Take a few moments, if you will. Tell us a little bit about some of these disturbing statistics and why it's so important that the people should be aware, if they're not already, about the increasing amount of domestic violence across Northwest Indiana and the rest of the country.
Domestic violence does affect one in four women and one in seven men. So those statistics are really high. So when we go out, myself or my team, and we meet with the community or schools or organizations, we really highlight that because if you think about how high those statistics are, think about your circle of family and friends. So this disturbing fact is that when you think about that, in your circle of family and friends, either you, someone you know, someone you love has been affected by it or will be affected by it. That's why we do so much work with the community, and we try to get awareness out. And Domestic Violence Awareness Month is a really great opportunity for us to get out there, connect with more people in the community, organizations, schools, so we can help prevent this from happening. You were also correct in saying 20 people are victims of physical violence every minute in the United States. That is very alarming. More than 10 million Americans are victims of physical violence annually. So when you think about that, those are just very disturbing facts.
When you take a look at the ranges of violence of some type or another, there are different categories, I guess, although you probably don't think of it as such. Talk about the different types of abuse that men and women can face at the hands of somebody that they really love and trust.
Sure. Most people, when you think about domestic violence, you automatically think it's all physical, which is not correct. Physical is pretty much the part that we all see, but there's emotional, mental, psychological, and even financial abuse, which Allstate Foundation has done a really great job in highlighting the financial abuse with the Purple Purse Challenge. So I'm not sure if you've heard about that, but they've really done a great job in highlighting financial abuse because 99% of victims will not leave their situation because they don't have control of their finances. They might not have a checking account. They're not in charge of their cash, credit cards, those types of things. So domestic violence has a wide range of factors that fall into that, and it's very unfortunate.
Are there any opportunities that people have? Obviously, they're in the situation, but they may have an opportunity. And I know this is where the St. Jude House comes into play, because you're not only offering an opportunity to be able to educate, let people know about domestic violence and how to prevent it, but also it's a shelter as well, too. Are these opportunities sometimes the first or maybe even the only opportunity that somebody who is in an abusive relationship of any type, whether it's physical or mental or psychological or financial abuse, the only way that they can at least make their first step out of it?
Give us a call. That is why we really try to get out there and educate people. Sometimes when people make that first phone call to us, they're not automatically ready to come to the shelter. We may have conversations with them on the phone several times before they're ready to come to us. And then we start safety planning with them. So we want to encourage people, just know about us, what we do, and get information from us, because we are an information source. So sometimes it's just making that phone call, getting them on the phone with us, and, you know, so we can start that dialogue with them. And again, hopefully they can get out of their situation. That's what we want them to do.
Linda, we know that the St. Jude House is not unique. There are lots of similar shelters like it across the country. But tell us the story of the St. Jude House in Crown Point. How did a vision, I guess, by Mr. Donald Burrell be able to be developed into the facility that you're in right now?
You know, that story is actually really amazing. And I have been fortunate enough to have worked with Don Burrell now and meet him since I've been in this position now. But the whole concept and why St. Jude House came to be is because of his passion, along with the Franciscan Sisters of Chicago, who also were part of, you know, founding St. Jude House. The reason why Don Burrell did it is because he ran a business, and he said, and I loved sitting down with him and hearing his heart and his passion for why he did this. He had employees that he noticed were going through domestic violence, and he really wasn't aware of what it was at the time, but he started noticing signs of physical abuse. Also, he said he would notice that on payday that some of his staff would go out, hand their check over to their person, to their, you know, husband, boyfriend, abuser, and that was a pattern he saw, and he just felt in his heart he really needed to do something about it, and he helped found St. Jude House. So that was the story behind that.
I understand. It's a landmark facility in the state of Indiana as well, too, because it's taken on responsibility of helping people over the years for domestic violence. Tell us how St. Jude's House in Crown Point seems to fit into the picture for the Indiana landmarks.
You know, we have great partnerships, and there are other great facilities like St. Jude House, like Haven House in Hammond, and Caring Place in Valparaiso. I'd like to say we're unique in that we were one of the first, or actually the first in the state of Indiana to publish our address. So we are not a private facility. We do have great security, and we do have a great relationship with the Crown Point Police Department, as well as other local law enforcement agencies, but we are unique in that sense. And what I like to say about us at St. Jude House is we don't only provide food and shelter. We actually do programming with our clients. We find out what their needs are. Each client is different. And while they're with us, they are actually setting goals, and we are working with them. My advocate team is working with them in helping them meet those goals weekly while they're with us. In addition, we have a commitment to the community. So my team is involved in several initiatives within the community with law enforcement. We actually have an initiative with Lakeshore Media right now and the Allstate Foundation in a financial empowerment project. We have a commitment to the community, and we are working with local bars and alcohol-serving establishments with an initiative called Raise the Bar Indiana. So I like to say St. Jude House is unique, and we don't only have a commitment to our clients that we serve residentially and non-residential clients, but also to the community.
I guess you do have to reach out to the community at large as well, because not only folks that rely on you for help in trying to break the cycle of abuse in whatever manner it may be, come to you looking for assistance for shelter in some cases, but you have to go out to the community and do your part to make them aware of the problem and hopefully try and break it out there, don't you?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. And, you know, Chris, I believe that that's why we've seen more male clients in the last year and a half, because mm-hmm. we have done a great job of getting out there and breaking that, you know, the embarrassment or the stigma of domestic violence. People don't like to talk about it. It's not something that you want to sit down and talk with your family about at dinner, but I feel like our team has done a great job in our outreach that we said, you know, we say it's not just a female problem. We have male clients too. Our crisis line is 800-254-1286.
We're talking with Linda Perez, who is the executive director of the St. Jude's House, which is a domestic family, a domestic violence prevention center, as well as a shelter in Crown Point. Linda, what it seemed to be, I guess if you go on the website, you can find out more in more detail, but what seemed to be the values and the vision of the St. Jude House, not only is were those in first envisioned by Don Burrell, but what you've been able to carry through over the years?
You know, well, we have our mission is basically to celebrate life and serve with joy. And that might seem weird considering we are a domestic violence shelter, but really it is. We are about celebrating life with our clients and helping them. And then our vision basically is, you know, St. Jude House, we are the catalyst, or we will be the catalyst in Northwest Indiana for the prevention, education, and awareness of domestic violence and sexual abuse. We provide quality, compassionate, and effective services to those impacted by abuse. It is our commitment to be out in the community. Our preventative measures are to teach people and to educate people on healthy relationships. And that's why we love being able to go into schools and universities and colleges and, you know, because it is important for children, even at a very young age, to understand what domestic violence is and what a healthy relationship should look like.
Now, Linda, we know this is the 20th annual National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And, of course, you basically you celebrate it every single day there at the facility in Crown Point. But are there anything plans special other than some of the initiatives you talked about earlier that you're carrying forth here during this particular month?
Right now, our team is just, we have we are part of the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence, which as all shelters are across Indiana. And the campaign for this month is Make Your Purple Pop. And POP stands for Participate, Organize, and Prevent. So what our team is doing is we are actively doing a lot more outreach than we normally do. So this is a very busy month for us. So we have been invited to several events, you know, schools, organizations to do a presentation. A lot of this month is really focused on awareness. And then on Thursday, October 19th, is Purple Thursday. So we will be, you know, posting about it, you know, making sure that people are wearing purple and just what it means. And it's celebrating or making aware Domestic Violence Awareness Month. It's all about education this month.
Linda Perez, thank you very much for being with us to talk about it.
You're welcome. Well, thank you for having me.
Linda Perez is the executive director of the St. Jude's House, which is the Family Domestic Violence Prevention Center and Shelter, which is located in Crown Point. And we're talking with her because the month of October is the Domestic Violence Awareness Month. In fact, it's the 20th year. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Chris Nolte.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program's link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure to search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sarah Dykstra.